I'd like to say a special thanks to Billy, because he told us about this place.
Thank you, Billy.
Two short things. One serious, one not. Right, remember it. The serious one is by Philip Larkin, and it's a poem about spring called Coming. On longer evenings, light, chill, and yellow bathes the serene foreheads of houses. A thrush somewhere, laurel surrounded in the deep, bare garden. Its fresh, peeled voice astonishing the brickwork. It will be spring soon. It will be spring soon. And I, whose childhood is a forgotten boredom, feel like a child who comes on a scene of adults reconciling and can understand nothing but the peculiar laughter.
Yeah.
At the other end of the scale, I was just reading a book of parodies and a couple of lines caught my eye. So a spoof of T.S. Eliot. Sitting in the kitchen, doing your philately, or in the WC, rewriting Lady Chatterley. At this time last year, I was 54. And this time next year, I should be 62. Noel Coward did a series of spoofs of the Sitwell family and their pomposity, and this bursts the bubble of pomposity. He wrote under the name of Hernia Whittlebot. None understand us. We don't understand ourselves. Blow, blow, thou winter wind, rough and rude, like a goat's behind. Unfathomable, deep, the pornographic sheep, like bus conductors creep. And my favourite. Slap the cat, count the spinach, Aunt Matilda's gone to Greenwich.
For the night that's in it, I'm just going to throw out a quick poem myself.
Yes.
It's pride and thanking Mary Dorsey as well. Not many lesbian feminist poems have been written Os Gaeilge and published, and I'm very proud to have this one. And I've forgotten the bloody name of it. I don't forget the woman it was written about.
I was
though.
Going to say little that.
Does she know? I'll remember the name of it. I'll say it in Irish and I'll say it in English then. Nil sig am loch, is fuinte scéile I the oiloch, bachor gadorfi deirdre art. An shot an ocht, mishe gradar ocht fi chulint na man, da aig farkalong an vahu chon. Nadar, an rod eger dyn a dalvachu, is na gwer an rod eis dachart, no beidr na chum a latsa fuck. Malin da arc maltoch mara, quirin tu me am a host, Bunin tu diat dochula, bunin tu diem mochula, or skalina allanig snow or fudna molly probernacha, lasracha glubus a globa, bolan a doitochta, bolan a doitochta, mokiach vartri hinna koshkinla, or son the man rivloidacha. It's called Banna Mala, Honey Woman. Honey woman, nobody is without fault. Your beauty is terrifying. You should have been named Deirdre. Here tonight I'm ranting about women's rights, your porcelain face emotionless. I cannot tell whether you are statuesque, things run over you, or whether you just don't give a fuck. Your honey gaze melts me. You take off your clothes, you take off my clothes. Our sweet shadows swim about flickering walls, flames loop and lick. The smell of burning, the smell of burning. My bra catches the candle flame in honour of revolutionary women. Grimhagav. Moving on, Grimhagav. Next on the open mic is Pat O'Connor.
Medieval. The King's Dilemma.
Thunderous applause greeted the king as he suddenly left his throne, and waving his arms about his head, he suddenly felt alone. For he had made the same mistake that kings had made before. He thought the world was at his feet, but death was at his door. His horse and hound he sent away, his hunting days were over. His lady's eyes were full of tears, but he could not console her. Then looking round, he bade farewell to each and every one, and straight he gave his crown and scepter to his eldest son. The cold, cold figure at the door took him by the hand and led him to the courtyard from the sad and grieving band. Then turning for one last goodbye, he bumped his weary head and woke to find 'twas just a dream he'd fallen out of bed.
Apologies if I get some of the names wrong. Teresa, is it Horan?
Yeah.
Horan. Horan. Yeah. Horan Chapel?
Yeah.
Any relative?
No. Mainly from Clare. This is a poem about salmon fishing in a little place in Clare called Rinna Gunnacht. Spring starlight sees his upturned cur across the sand like a four-legged beetle. Nets cast across the bay, corks and buoys keep them afloat. Anchors prevent drift as men spin yarns at Castle Bonfire. Low tide brings all hands on deck, salmon jumping in a frenzy, caught by gills and teeth, placed on the stern for market. Laden Curragh rocks, shorebound with turning tide, sea ablaze with morning sun glow, eyes now pools of light where silver salmon dance.
And next up is Jack Shortland.
I wasn't going to do this, but Mary's business about her sick friend and that brought to me. It's a bit autobiography, you'll have to bear with me. It's called Cabbage Soup. You could take a small tuft of grass from a stone circle and bring the sacred soil to your garden. You could listen to the telepathic whispers and write your poetry and take a long look into a kaleidoscope and breathe. You could give euros to the buskers to keep the music in the street and swim in the sea and walk and talk out your worries and dance and do your yoga flow and drink spring water and actually like cabbage soup. You could sprinkle holy water and work at what you like and laugh a lot and feel well loved. You could light a candle. Yet you could be told your test results show up abnormal cells.
Thank you.
Charles, welcome to my house. No, that's all right. Knee bridge.
There's a poem there.
Yeah. Right. Continuing to wrestle with the short poem, I thought I might just insert a tree liner before I get down to real business. Poet on his belly with binoculars while 10 swans rise in the air. Someone has given the game away. I thought I'd read this very nice poem by Robert Lowell from one of his last respectable collections, I think it might be said, for the Union Dead. The poem is very, very nice indeed. He he had parted with his first wife, who turned out to be a successful novelist, and they had been living in, there were all sorts of things could be said about it, but in any case, I'll just read it. The old flame, my old flame, my wife, remember our list of birds? One morning last summer, I drove by our house in Maine. It was still on top of the hill. Now, a red ear of Indian maize was splashed on the door. Old Glory with 13 stripes hung on a pole. The clapboard was old red schoolhouse red. Inside, a new landlord, a new wife, a new broom. Atlantic seaboard antique shop, pewter and plunder shone in each room. A new frontier, no running next door now to phone the, sorry, no running next door now to phone the sheriff for his taxi to Bath and the state liquor store. No one saw your ghostly imaginary lover stare through the window and tighten the scarf at his throat. Help to the new people, help to their flag, to their old restored home on the hill. Everything had been swept bare, furnished, garnished, and aired. Everything changed for the best. How quivering and fierce we were. Snowbound together, simmering like wasps in our tent of books. Poor ghost, old love, speak with your old voice of flaming insight that kept us awake all night in one bed and apart. We heard the plow groaning uphill, a red light, then a blue, as it tossed off the snow to the side of the road.
Thanks, Jimmy. Everybody knows about Odysseus, but maybe not too many know about Telemachus, his son. And I wrote this to be said in a Dublin accent. It's called Telemachus Tells His Tale. I presume people know about the suitors and Penelope and all of that. I don't have to go into all of that, but anyway. I was only just a babe in arms. You couldn't say a boy when the da decided to up sticks and fight a war in Troy. 'Tis far from battle I was reared. I halted every port to find out where he ended up. But they had no report. Athena told me, mind the ma, that 'twas all down to me. Man up and put the run on those annoying ye, says she. At the assembly that I called to complain at their away days, two of the suitors yelled at me and told me go to Hades. They ate us out of house and home, the ma they would deflower, and I'm supposed to stand alone and fight the poxy shower. When I headed off to Pylos, where Nestor rules the roost, I met with Epicasta, which gave me a great boost. His daughter is a gorgeous babe. We'd lots of food and wine. But when I asked her if she'd come to Sparta, she declined. Her brother was to bring me there to question Menelaus, who said Calypso had the dad and nothing should delay us. When Da came back eventually, he was totally ignored. And I forgot to lock the room where our weapons had been stored. The Bowsies who invaded us got their filthy mitts on them, but we strung them up and beat them down. They will never rise again. I have to make my own way now. Go back and start from zero. Not easy when your old fella is such a blooming hero.
James Joyce, eat your heart out.
I wish St. James Joyce, eat your heart out. Thank you. And partaking and listening.
Thank you so much. If that car is locked in, I'd be blemt then.
Come back if it's locked in.
I'm going to continue with the LBGT Plus theme of evening. This is a poem I wrote. It's set in Barcelona in 1995. And it's about seeing two gay guys walking down the street holding hands. Now, Barcelona will be known to many of you here tonight, I'm sure. And it's a very liberal city, a very open city. But of course, Spain had been there's no nice way of saying it, a fascist dictatorship until 1978. So that was still being processed through the system, through the body politic. Certainly at that point in 1995, and probably still today. So this poem is called Two Boys. I'll just get in the right gear for that now, yeah. They hold hands, saying nothing. They return from the rippleless sea. They traverse the long and indolent noon and afternoon, like supple, frictionless sunlight, as if their calves, their calved torsos, were manufactured from sunlight, from wavelengths tanned and tangible. They know no ignorant byways, no side streets with stupefied, rancorous men, will enter neither evidence nor pleading. And as they amble manhand and amiable manhand past the surf shops of Admiral Cervera Street, one brown boy bobs his mouth down, dips a sudden unexpected kiss to the shoulder, to the strolling Muscovado elbow of his companion, takes a lip full of salt from that easiness. And the butterflies of rumour start absconding. Flakes of hearsay, membranes barely there but tangible, from their colony of notches in that great pocked wall. Their pigments spelling the future, telling nothing whatever will ever be the same again in all the precincts of Catalonia. They hesitate, hover amid the Saturday traffic, and in their pullulating spiral climb the air. They skim level across the esplanade, above the Museum of National History, above the two boys. Then out, across the inland shallows, above the sleek gleaming sloops and schooners, until they're only a blue plume vanishing, until they're lost in a haze of heat and spray. Then further, fluttering further, as they're spooled across the teal and lavender immensities, their tenuous wingspans breaching, horizon after horizon, straining to reach and reaching a schedule of quaysides, workshy terracotta harbors, diesel-scented docklands, beaches that await their butterfly report. Montpellier, Naples, on what more distant, yet more shimmering somewheres, will their tidings, their indigo gospel, their weightlessness have settled on by morning. Thanks very much.
Carol.
Billy, I'm looking forward to the next political homoerotic collection.
It's so am I, and it's... I'll be in touch.
Next up, Patricia Walsh.
Up tonight, and this is called "I'm Not Being Your Fiancé." This is going to hurt in the plain souls of propriety. A footnote in the literature of another body. The forgotten orgasm perplexes the unavowed. Not taking hints from anywhere, running finally dry. A sole trader hijacking innocence as is. Crashing and burning eventually, fool that you are. Listening to blistering theories about everything. The feel of discrimination hangs on your fence. Murderous fantasies unfurled, a dartic failure. Selectively alone, holding the pendant outright. Keeping transactions public, looking very stoned. Hiding relationships with due force. Nothing having twigged in favour of the law of the low. This maddening spirit resides with the strange. Living on borrowed interrogation, thought, word, and deed. Squarely viewing the cause of death, why bibbing to failure a gargantuan task? Done, as you will, owing thousands for a living. Dying, as lived, in a crude station. A soul restless for want of satisfaction. Nothing to declare, therefore a failure. Poisoning rivers running flee, job done well. Elusive poetry stands without your help. Immortal in the block, code of forgetting, posthumous readiness going to waste. Thank you.
Next up we have Carmen. Carmina.
Yeah.
Well, this might resonate with the theme of the evening, but it's not about that. I wrote it originally. It's about gossip or the fear of being gossiped about, people, what people think about you, and how you retreat within yourself to do some work and change because your ways are not working or you realize that they are not working anymore, need to change. So. And sorry for the pronunciation. It's called caterpillar. It's a well-known fact that dull people with boring lives tattletale on others to kill their bored time. The reaper came for my dreams. Their seed was already lost, so he left empty hands, but still. Flower-birded bears and bald mermaids frigidly spoke, spreading the news to the folk. Sorry souls, with their big mouths, spitting blood, trying to cheapen what they don't understand. 80 words in barren poems with no images, tropes, or rhyme, putting a stranglehold on voice and pride. Yes, I retreated. I'm a caterpillar in the dark, within the twilight shades of my golden silk cocoon, rewriting myself back and forth with 100 tiny hands. But soon I'll rise and soar on colorful wings as a butterfly.
Again, I wasn't going to read out this poem, but thanks to Mary, I felt like I had to. I think equality can mean a lot more, because like the gender is very loud and I love it, but it can be way more voices have to be heard. And I think this poem is kind of broad in the sense that, especially in school, you know, like students can feel hard to believe that equality actually exists, because other people that can be stronger, be willed, can be very hard to battle against. And I've met people who've been bullied, and it's the worst thing I've ever seen. Their socialization goes way down. They you can become completely different people. It's the worst thing that can ever happen to your social status, how you can talk to people. Your social ability can go way down, it's awful. And it's been very hard to get back out of it. But even though like the title says one thing, I think I hope it's global. And that's why I think Mary's poems are very powerful today, because they were more than just the theme of tonight. They were very global, and thank you so much for that. Asperger's. Sometimes I feel their faces look like glass. So when I look at them, I see through them. And when I say hello, I miss. And when I try to socialize, it rebounds back, and that hurts. It's worse when it breaks. Only afar, they're visible, talking, laughing, and socializing like it's dancing. And when I approach, they make me feel like a cichlid, cocooned in a fish glass, gazing wistfully at the outside occupants that tap the glass for my attention. The worst part is it's not their fault. Thanks.
There's no title to this, so I don't want to explain it. Lead epaulets, a burden that cannot be lightened. Spanish boots, unsuitable for steps. A stricken titan, those sinews stripped and made into a lyre's strings. But who can play such a thing? Glagolitic mutterings, a pause and click forward. Clockwork, always returning to the same place. Nothing is ever commemorated properly here. A cinder pat to be swept under a plush carpet. A discarded scabbard, Jadwiga, a pewter heart, and silver leg, Anabasis. Thank you.
Next up, we have Benjamin Burns. Woo!
I bought a new pair of shoes today. And this is a poem I wrote. Poets, pay attention. There's nothing like the clean white outsoles of a new pair of trainers. Two blank pages meet the pavement. Cirrus clouds at 45,000 feet, the altitudinous thrill of consumerism. Each step is a deft kiss away from emptiness. Lilies offset against a concrete river, streamlined to the purest manufactures. God broke the angel Gabriel's metatarsals and placed them beneath my feet for a price, €50. If only Lorca could have seen them flash down fire escapes in New York. When the outsole shines, the foot is hidden, fitted in stylish silence.
Patrick Nocton, am I pronouncing it right? I was listening to some Brando interviews on YouTube yesterday, and I just liked his idea of when he never learnt any lines, so he just did it in the moment, and he was hoping the viewer would be able to grasp the words as he was trying to grasp them in his own time, you know. So I said I just come completely unprepared today. I'll just see what comes to mind. But I just wanted to mention one thing that Mary mentioned earlier about, you know, not getting too politically sensitive. It's lovely to be surrounded by so many beautiful women and strong-willed women. The cervical cancer thing was a terrible thing that happened. I'm a medical scientist, so I was actually in the Oireachtas with the Joint Health Committee, and it was an honour to have three very strong and caring women to my left. They were research doctors, medical scientists as well. And we did predict that this was going to happen 10 years ago. They didn't listen to the medical scientists. They just completely ignored us for financial reasons. And it was terrible to pick up the paper about 4 months ago and see the first case happening. We knew it was going to happen, and it was a travesty. And it shouldn't have happened. And hopefully in the future, they will seek advice from those who actually do the tests. Anyway, sorry. Really unprepared. So last night, met a friend. We were in the Abbey Tavern, and I walked home. It seemed like I was meant to walk home, and it all happened for a reason. I can understand it better today. So I walked along the Model Farm Road. There was a wonderful, period property there, just across from the Lee Garage. It was like a plantation period property. It sold a couple of years ago to a contractor. It's been smashed to the ground. And they're going to put about 10 A-rated new builds, about €1 million each. I remember a couple of months ago going into the old period property before it was destroyed by my little daughter. I just wanted to show her this, you know, this beautiful property. So yesterday I was walking home, and I popped in, got in through the fence, big pile of wooden rubble, and at the very top there was this almost intact wooden window frame with one pane of glass left. So I took it home. There wasn't many people on the road, thank God. And it was quite light, it was easy to bring home. So brought it home, left it in the shed, and went to work today. And came back today, and I started cleaning it up, fixing it. And then suddenly it dawned on me why I did it. Unfortunately, a close friend, a relative of mine is a drug addict, a very bad drug addict. And I understood then what I did. I took it home, almost like I was taking him home and kind of caring for it at home, brushing it down, scrubbing it. It was at the top of the pile, it was almost destroyed, but somehow it managed to survive. So bring it home and just fixing it up today was a way of, it's kind of like a therapy for me. It was a way of some kind of light and hope remaining. So very briefly, when the five-word poem came around, I managed to do a poem on that. So I said I'd give you the introduction. I didn't get parade into the poem because it just didn't seem to fit. It's not very poetic, but anyway. Last night I walked home from the Abbey Tavern. I stopped along the way on the Model Farm Road, across from the Lee Garage, beyond the Church of the Holy Spirit. There amongst the pile of smashed wood from an old period property, I picked up an old wooden window frame. I carried it home with pride. And today after work, I brushed off the crusty white paint before locking it away safely in the dark, empty shed closet. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Shauna Lynch.
Woo! Yeah. I'll be conscious of time. I really like drag queens. I think they're a great celebration of masculinity and femininity. I think they're marvelous performance artists, and sometimes they can represent female sexuality more than females are actually allowed, but it's more allowed watching a man pretend to be a woman being like it than it is to actually watch a woman. So yes, I also wanted to have a bell, but they're hard to find on short notice. Hear ye, hear ye. After a catastrophic history of conflict and sanctimony, we've decided it's time to give something else a go. A recent proposal has been put in place for all priests to be replaced by flamboyant poets and drag queens. Every Sunday Mass is to be a disco, a DJ at each altar, a monastery of mirror balls, communions of joy and laughter, Fine attire must be donned, be ready to twirl for the gods. All that condemnation to hell got quite exhausting, so we're trying a more celebratory approach of love and compassion. That was, of course, our initial aim, but of it we've made a hames. So it's time to try again, to spice up our lives, as those girls say. We'll keep the wine, encourage to be kind, throw a party in the pulpit. Fill the pews with those ready for an apology overdue for any humiliation we may have caused. No more announcement of sin, persuasion of guilt, telling of one's doom by some holier-than-thou loon. We'll keep the rainbow windows, the stations of the cross-dressers. Switch Adam and Eve with the snake to Britney at the VMAs.
Yes.
Change Mary Magdalene for Madonna. Like a prayer, and I'm a slave for you, will be sung wildly by the choir. Let's applaud divas, Jezebels, and whores. Thank those who came before, for no one here will cast stones. We be out here living our best lives. Hashtag mask goals. When the ceremony begins, this performer in heels, taller than Crow Project, will open her mouth with laughter and teach kindness on her tongue. We'll pray to patron saints RuPaul and Panty Bliss, all those Stonewall kids, those wrongly persecuted, and those who dared to vogue. The world is hard enough without being told you are full of sin. We've come to this realization. So we've decided to let that sit for the time being. The church will now be fun and inclusive of everyone. It's been in the closet for far too long. It needs a revamp, perhaps a fall slash, and a sequin gown to stop all the mopping around. We hope fringe culture inspired by glamour can save us from some sorrow. We thoroughly regret the shame we endorsed and forced you to internalize. Now go forth and wrap yourself in light, give yourself that ooh ah ah, and let's make the world gay again. Yeah.
The process was obvious. At least, that was had been thought, and I bought it all. It was easy, simple, it was straight, no wrinkle. I was to move along to join the procession. It was natural, yet another evident rule, satisfaction in following directions. I was a groom-to-be, I'd make my parents proud. I would choose a bride, pretty, maybe, obedient, yet intelligent, make my own family. I was a male, dominant by default, a lion with a thick leather and a crusty mane, a king in the jungles, conqueror from a roar or stare, a one-man parade that never stumbled. As long as I kept walking straight, I could ignore the closet. Yes, the one full of clothes, allegedly, and from which, for the better or worse, people come out bare. The procession had gone on, my mane was yet to grow. I started to ponder, what kind of wonder the upright casket could hide in there. I went in, challenging myself to the dare. I had nothing to lose. Shut the door behind my heart into the darkness. Oh, the things I found there. No happiness, no gayness, no rainbow, no guys, no girls, no riches. Only loves and fears intertwined into fabrication, speckled with my grease-stained lies, tainting everything.
my lust and fetishes weaving into my skin. I stared down the skeleton of my undying demon until I knew what makes up the bone. Then I came out, straight and bare, left the closet empty of a nightmare, ready to join a different parade where pride is in the stride.
Yeah.
Last but not least, Jim
Crickard. After hearing about Shauna's church, I just want to be called Sister Jim Crickard.
Yeah.
since it's pricey, I'm going to do a poem I've done a few times before, because I think it's like my magnum opus. It's my little gay poem. It's called A Queen Trying to Survive His Teens. I was born May 6th, 1992. Homosexuality was legalized in 1993. I guess that means I was an illegal baby. You know what they say about gays, always needing an entrance. By the time I'd reached 12, I knew well how to behave. I studied the hand movements of men. Steady ships tied down by their hips, and when they sat, they sailed into the bay of their lap. Whereas mine were pink Barbie boats that zipped around in conversations, gesticulating. When I sat with my hands clasped on my lap, they became a bone china basin held by rubber wrists. But then I turned them into ships. Each morning in the bathroom, the boy machine, the black bathroom mat, a conveyor belt, carried me along a line of Lynx cans spraying gas from their steel eyes. A comb, slick with Dax wax, moved over and back, until I emerged glossy, packaged, believable. I befriended some boys, the soccer kind, said I supported Arsenal to survive, when really I was watching Desperate Housewives. But I deny my love for that show three times before the cock crowed. Their approval was my air. When I turned 16, I felt the word fabulous on my tongue. That sparkling, ridiculous word tasted like a cherry cocktail that I splashed around in conversations, announcing who I was. I flew a flag and hilarious girls encircled me protectively. Their little gay president. We laughed so hard together, moving as one, wall to wall in the school halls, an untouchable circle.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. What a wonderful way to end a magical evening. Thank you very much, O'Veil. Thank you, Mary Dorsey. Thank you, everyone. Safe home. We give another pool of us for our guest host.
Sure.